As usual, I got a request to give a talk this evening on an email from Canada. And they said, can you please give a talk about... Exciting, isn't it? Finding out what the talk's going to be about. About Buddhamus. Because from the time that I used to stay in Thailand 35 years ago, when it came to this time of year, we were Western monks. And monks who grow up in Europe, United States, Australia, we have had that tradition of 25th of December, Christmas time. And so we asked Ajahn Chah, should we do anything for that day? He said, for what day? He said, Christmas. And what do you mean Christmas? What is Christmas? And so we explained to him, and he wanted to get some ideas. So he said, it's a time for peace and goodwill, of kindness and generosity. He said, peace, goodwill, kindness and generosity? Said Ajahn Chah, I'm into that. Yeah, let's celebrate it. So he gave us permission, and he would always call it Buddhamus Day. So from that time on, we just used to call it Buddhamus Day. And it's fascinating. Why not? I know that sometimes some religions can be so dogmatic and narrow. One of the things I always liked about Buddhism is the spiritual path. It can be just embracing. It can be just wide. And I don't know if I told this poem last week, but this poem is going to appear in the Enlightened Times when it comes out. I think, when is it due? I think it's the end of the month. Beginning of January, yeah. Somebody sent me this poem which says... they drew a circle which shut me out. Heretic, rebel, someone to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle. We drew a circle which kept them in. In other words, when you have like dogmatism, you draw a circle and everyone else is outside of that. Only your friends, your religion, the people you admire, the people you agree with, they're inside. But... sort of the job of a spiritual person is to draw a wider circle which can include more people. So as Buddhists, this is what we're supposed to do, this is what loving kindness is, draw wider and wider and wider circles. So it can include all the people, not just the people you like. Because sometimes people are so dogmatic, it means we can only be Buddhists. No, that's just too wide. Only Theravada Buddhists. No, that's even too wide. Only Theravada Buddhists from Thailand. No, that's too wide. Only Thai Theravada Buddhists who are disciples of Ajahn Chah. No, even that's too wide. Only Thai Theravada Buddhists, disciples of Ajahn Chah who don't ordain bhikkhunis. No, that's... Oops. Oops. No, we don't do that. That's not the job, is to restrict. The job of spirituality is actually to widen and widen and widen and widen things. So, we just widen our circle, not try and keep people out, because that type of narrow-mindedness, that's not the spirit of the season. I remember even just, I used to, for the early years when I was a monk, I would try my hardest to try and get a visit to, England to see my family, and the time they came together, which was Christmas time. And after a couple of years going to England, London at Christmas time, I decided that is not the right time to go and visit London. It was cold, it was miserable, it was rainy, it wasn't even snowing. No white Christmas, a slushy Christmas. Just wet and miserable and cold and dark. I couldn't believe it, having been in the tropics, which were very, very bright and light. Now, the sun would only come up about 10 o'clock. It would just come up and then it would go down again at 2 o'clock. It was just so dark and dull. So, but when I did go over there, one thing I did notice, because I was staying in this Sri Lankan temple, which was in walking distance to where my mum lived. So it was wonderful. I could sleep there and have a meal, then I'd just walk over to my mum's apartment to spend the Christmas afternoon with. And I was there for a few weeks beforehand, and remember this was about 30 years ago, and people saw me. And they thought I was weird. I mean, big time weird. Because this is all, I haven't got any other clothes which I can wear on special occasions. When you sort of go, you don't wear sort of dark glasses and a fedora and a raincoat to be anonymous. This is what you wear all the time. And so that when I had to walk through the streets of London, and literally people would cross the road you know, when I was coming in their direction. And you try and say good morning to them because, I was a very happy person. And they just wouldn't even have eye contact with you. You know, they look at the ground and think, who is this guy? Is he going to try and convert me, rape me, or what is he going to do? So because of that, I would still keep on saying good morning to people, but I remembered it was so wonderful on the Christmas morning when I was walking from this Sri Lankan temple to visit my mum. I said good morning to people, and people said good morning back. They were actually polite. I never realised that English people could be polite, but only one day of the year. Actually, they are polite, but it was a really noticeable difference that people were kind to you. And so that sometimes you think of the circle. Many years ago, I did a little meditation technique, and I'll just share it with you now. It just comes up. Because when I was meditating, it was just a way of doing loving-kindness meditation. This is the spirit of the season. May all beings be happy and well. Remember, I said all beings be happy and well. May they all be at peace. I never said, this is a time of peace and goodwill to all men. Isn't that a terrible thing to say? So, say it to all men, all women, all gays, transgenders. But that's a terrible thing to say as well. What about the animals? So as Buddhists, peace and goodwill to all turkeys, all pigs, and all ingredients of sausages or whatever else you eat. Because they deserve some goodwill as well. So peace and goodwill to all beings. Now you can see now that you're actually drawing circles and expanding them, expanding them, expanding them. Could it be just peace and goodwill to my friends or my cult? That's not very sort of spiritual, is it? So, at this time of the year, you can imagine if you're doing a meditation, if you're doing a reflection for Christmas time, draw a circle, imagine a circle, and inside that circle are all the people you really like and you respect. Maybe you and maybe me, I don't know. Because sometimes that we sometimes have such small circles, and that keeps us very lonely and very suspicious and afraid of others. So imagine that circle. These are all the people you can really trust and love easily. Now expand that circle. And draw in some people, they're okay. But they're not very close to you. Expand it. And once you start expanding this circle, you feel, well, actually, the more people you put inside the circle, the more happy you feel, the more better you feel. This is truth. This is right. You have a feeling. Don't go into, intellectual pursuits and logic and reason. Why should I include this person in my circle? Forget about that. Feel it. Now, the spiritual life is an emotional journey. It's felt. It's not thought about. And that's why that if you, have too many degrees in philosophy, you don't understand anything about religion. So it's felt. It's in the heart, not so much in the head. So you feel it. It feels actually quite good to have more people in a circle. Then expand it even further, and expand it even further, and expand it even further. And you just get into this expansion mode. It feels good. And then you just take it to places you've never been before. You include people who've hurt you, mistreated you, abused you. People you just don't like. Soon you find your enemies are inside that circle. And you just keep on expanding it. Until the real villains, the horrible people, are also included. Until that circle gets so big, it goes to the very edges of the universe and includes everybody inside your circle of love. Somebody wrote me a letter about a week ago. I've been talking to them, and I was saying that I've been around a long time. I've been in prisons and seen people who others say are evil. People have really hurt others, raped, abused kids. You met these people in prisons. But when some of you have also gone prison visiting as well, as like a nice service to the community. But the strange thing was that whenever you saw these people, they were human beings. They didn't have horns poking out of their head and a towel under their trousers. No, these were human beings, and they were good. Of course, that's a shock when you first see that. See that there is no such thing as an evil person. They've all got a huge amount of goodness in them. Why they do those terrible things, so many causes, so many reasons. I can't really know. I wasn't in their situation. But I certainly see so much goodness in his people. And when I saw that, my circle just expanded by a huge amount. And it felt so good to be able to respect and like a criminal. Because they, after a while, they weren't criminals anymore. As I've said here many times, I've never met a criminal in my life. I've never met a murderer. I've never met a thief. I've never met a liar. I've never met a rapist. What I've met is people who have lied. People who have raped. People who have stolen. People who have killed. There are people who have done one or two stupid, terrible, hurtful things. But they're much bigger than that. And when I see them so much bigger, so much wider than those things which they're notorious for, it's very easy to include them in my circle. And when I include them in my circle and they know they're included in, they change. When they're outside your circle, that's when they're dangerous. Dangerous to themselves and dangerous to others. When you bring them in, what does it feel like to you when you're rejected, put outside of somebody's heart, somebody's love, somebody's friendship? It sucks. But when you're included in, wow, you feel so inspired, uplifted. This is good, this is great. So you know how it feels. You want to be included in to the circle. So you include other people in the circle and know what it's like. And then you expand it, expand it, expand it. So I did this. All the people which I liked, all the things which I liked, all the situations I felt comfortable with, that was inside my circle. All the things which I didn't really hate, but they were just on the outside. The sort of people, situations, experiences, well, you know, I didn't love them, but they were sort of okay. Like going to the dentist, you know, sort of going to an interview for a job, you know, going to the policeman stops you for speeding or whatever. All those things you don't really like, but it's not that bad. And you go further, the people, you know, your ex, the people who have hurt you, the people who have really cheated you, they're further out. And all those other terrible, terrible people. Expanding the circle and bringing them in feels so good. And it's such a wonderful attitude to have. And I said that, you know, my circle has included everybody. And this lady said, how can you love someone like Adolf Hitler? How can you love somebody like that who's done such a terrible, terrible, terrible thing? For those of you who've got a copy of that book, Open the Door of Your Heart, I think I put it in that book, there's a poem. And the poem is about a son's love and respect to his mother. And I can't quote the poem verbatim, but it goes something like this. Sort of, when your mother calls, now when your mother is old and cranky and she asks you for something, answer her, not with irritation but with kindness. And if she asks again, answer her again with kindness. And if she asks again, don't be impatient but answer her with kindness. Because the time will come, the terrible time, when she can ask you no more. So treat her with love and treat her with patience. Now, I'm not doing justice to the poem. It goes something like that. But the wonderful thing about the poem was its author, Adolf Hitler. And it was wonderful. There was a guy who's supposed to be a terrible person, but his love for his mother was just so wonderful. He wrote this incredible, beautiful poem. So I like to read that out, you know, when I can, because what that does, why do we judge people so much? A lot of time we only see part of them, and that's the reason why we put them outside of our circle. But not just people. Experiences in life, things you have to deal with, you know, the cancers, the deaths, the sort of being made redundant, sacked from your job, you know, not being cared for, being abused, being let down. All those terrible things, losing all your money in the stock market. Has it gone up or gone down? I don't know, but it always seems to be yo-yo, bouncy. But whatever happens, why not include that in your circle as well? And part of the spiritual life is being able to include everything, all human experience, all people, everything into your circle, which is what I've tried to teach here. You know what I've taught, that so often when terrible things happen to you, You know, that you know, no one sends you any Christmas presents. You're at home and no one calls you. No one loves you. You're just Christmas and alone. Wonderful! I'd give my right arm to be alone and be able to meditate all day instead of having to give a talk here and talk with people over there and answer the phone. So I would say that if anything unpleasant happens to you, you know, it's like treading in the shit. When you tread in the dog poo, what do? Whoopee! More fertilizer for my mango tree. If you don't like mangoes, apples. Don't like apples? No, your cabbage or whatever else you grow in your backyard, or your flowers. So it's wonderful when you have all this wonderful manure to grow the beautiful garden of your life. And so even the shit, the smelly stuff of life, is right in the middle of my circle. I love that stuff. Why? It's because, you know, you can appreciate it. It's there for a purpose. The pain, the difficulties in life, bring it in. And so it's not peace and goodwill to all beings. It's peace and goodwill to my whole life, with all its many experiences, both pleasant and painful, both disappointing and inspiring. Peace and goodwill to everything. Now when you understand Buddhamas or Christmas like that, now it really is spiritual. Because you're making peace with your past. I don't know how many people just have done terrible things in their past. And have just misbehaved. Have done things they wouldn't like to tell anybody. And when you do such things, what's the thing another terrible thing I did once when I was a kid. I'm going on my personal experiences. I think some of you must have heard these things. I said to the monks the other night, I'm only just 58 years of age, and there's only a certain amount of things you could do in 58 years, especially when I was a pretty good person. So my stories are quite limited, so that's why I have to keep recycling them. And recycling is a very good thing. So now I've been looking in newspapers about the Copenhagen conference. I don't know how it's going, but recycling, you know, we always like to recycle our clothes, recycle our goods. I recycle my jokes and my stories. So, you know, I'm environmentally in tune. This particular story, I don't know why I should tell this, but I've already started. It was my mother's birthday. I was about 7 or 8 years of age. So what should I get for my mother? I was terrible to my mother. I really say sorry to her. But there was a fad in London at the time. A special delicacy, pie and eels. The eels were boiled and you ate them with a pie and sometimes with mash, potatoes. And so it was just a fad which lasted for about 6 months or a year, but there was a pie and eel shop close by. So I went there as a 7 or 8 year old to buy an eel. A live one. A terrible boy, because I wrapped it up and I put it in a box, put birthday paper around it, and I gave it to my mother. Oh, it was really mean. Oh, she screamed when she opened it. And I thought it was so funny. So, you know, I did stupid things as well when I was a kid. But, you know, you look at those things. My intention was pure. I was just having a bit of fun. I never really meant to give her. It's good stuff. She did have a strong heart. But all those silly little things you've done, and maybe you've done terrible, worse things, but you look at those things and it's just you learn from those things. You grow from those things, and you never allow those things to ruin your present moment. Now, you use them as fertilizer. You grow beautiful things. And when you grow beautiful things from those experiences, you find you can actually include them in. They're funny. You know, a lot of times when I go to funeral services and people give eulogies, sometimes they say the very good things which people have done, but you know, people have heard that many times before. A lot of times they say some of the stupid things which people have done. I remember this one guy from here had his funeral service. They said that, you know, him and his mate told this story. He said that when he was very young, here in Perth, you know, they blew up a builder's toilet in the block next door. I don't know how they blew it up. But anyway, they made everybody laugh. You know, kids being kids, a bit stupid. I mean, they may have been in big trouble these days. It was many, many years ago. But those sorts of stories, actually, they make people human. You know, it's the imperfections of sometimes the things we do wrong. They give us like a sense of, now there is a person who's trying to learn in the world who sometimes makes mistakes just like me. And if someone was so perfect, you know, it would make you sort of feel weird. Because we all have those imperfections, all have those memories of what stupid things we've done in the past, silly things we've done in the past. It makes us a sort of lovable. And this is why we can put things in the circle. We can see their purpose and their usefulness. We can make peace with all those things. And when you make peace with things in the past, you find they don't really affect you so much. You know, they're just old memories you laugh at, but they're not things you're ashamed of or you're afraid of. Things which you're ashamed of and afraid of, you keep outside the circle, which means you're a divided person. This, you know, your dark side is something which you don't like about yourself. And you know the only way to have peace and sort of love towards yourself and other people is to integrate. And to integrate doesn't mean just hiding away or time abolishing or washing away all your sins. It's actually incorporating the sins, embracing them, making them part of you. And even just celebrating them, if you can understand what I mean. Making use of them, learning, growing. And if you know what that is, that's how we make peace. We could build a circle, it grows, grows, grows. And all these things which we're afraid of, your past and your fears, all tend to vanish. You know, sometimes because people were hurt in the past, because they were abandoned, that's why sometimes we're just so afraid of being alone. As for me, yeah, sometimes you were abandoned, sometimes people were there. But I embrace that, forgive it, allow it to be, so there's no fear left anymore. So being by myself, being with others, I'm just at peace no matter what happens. Having many things, having few things, I'm at peace with those things. You know, being praised or being criticized, I'm at peace with those things. You're not afraid of anything, everything can come into your circle. When you have such a big circle like that, you can accept anything. That's almost called being enlightened. You make peace with things, embrace things. So you've got no business to do, no old stuff you have to heal, no things you have to get rid of. And doing things like that means it's taking the idea of peace and goodwill to a totally different level. And it's true, I mean, what happens when we have sort of a spiritual time like a Christmas time? It's not just giving presents. If we do give presents, what's the purpose of that giving? Giving is an expression of love. So remember, if you do give presents, what it's really there for. And receiving presents, somebody cares about you. That's what it really is. So at this Christmas time, if somebody gives you a present, never ever take it back to the shop and change it. If it's something which you can't use, then give it to someone else who can use it. And that's what I always like about being a monk. Because when somebody gives me something, I receive it. Even though there's no way I'm going to use it. People give me some really silly stuff. So especially at this time of the year, sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, happy Christmas to you. You've really helped me. Here's a little gift for me. And they give me a comb. I've had many combs. That's good fun. I just give me a comb. Well, I say thank you very much. I give it to somebody else who needs it. So one of the nice things is, if somebody gives you something and you say, no, I don't need it, what does that feel like? It's actually a rejection of an act of love and an act of care. So I always say that it's not the gift, it's the love which comes with that gift. Receive the love. A classic story, and this is an old story, before the Dalai Lama became famous, when he was still in Tibet, this journalist was following him, doing a little story. And when the Dalai Lama went visiting different towns and villages, you know, in Tibet, all the people would come to see him. And they would line up to give him a gift. You know, he was their spiritual leader, you know, the head of their faith. And they just want to do something, to give him something. And this journalist from the United States, of course, was getting more and more angry as he saw all these people lining up to give this man who lived in the palace, who had everything, even though he was supposed to be a monk, giving all these things. And in this one village, on this one day, the journalist totally lost his cool. Because he saw this woman, this old woman, dressed in rags, no, not a penny to her name, just poor and destitute, give the Dalai Lama a skirt. And the Dalai Lama received it. And this journalist just couldn't hold back. You call yourself a holy person, a spiritual leader. You've got so much, and you take a skirt from a woman. You don't need a skirt, you're a man. She needs it. Why did you do that? Why did you take it? And the Dalai Lama, sort of, you know, being sort of a spiritual person, when someone gets angry like that at you, you're calm. Because just the tone of your voice can calm people down. So he said, yes, you're right. If you say that to your husband when he argues with you, or your wife, that is totally disarming. Because when someone is arguing with you and say, yes, you're right, oh, really? So that's a very good ploy. But, said, yes, you're right, said the Dalai Lama, I don't need a skirt. But she needed to give it to me. And straight away the journalist's jaw dropped and understood. Sometimes you don't need those presents, but other people needed to give it to you. That's why when somebody gives me something, I accept it, not because I need it, because you need to express your love. And I want that to happen, because it's a beautiful transaction. And much of the stuff which you give me, or give one of the other monks, or give the nuns at Dharamsala, we respect it, because it's an act of respect and love and care. Thank you very much. And then we give it to somebody else. That's a wonderful thing to do. For many, 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 many years I never wore socks. Here, I think it was about this time of the year, there's one woman, I'm not sure if she's here, I think she may be this evening. She gave me a pair of socks. Said, thank you so much, even though I didn't need them. Said, thank you. And then she went off, and I went into the toilet just before the talk. And I put those socks on, and came and sat here on this seat. And after the meditation, I started giving the talk. And as I was giving the talk, I had to move. It wasn't because my legs were aching, but I wanted to put my foot out. And I looked at her, she was sitting over there, and then she noticed, I saw the corner of my eye, he's wearing my socks, he's wearing my socks. And that's how you deal, you know, with gifts. It's an act of love. So take it, wear it. And then afterwards I took it off, washed it, and gave it to some poor people who really needed the socks. But I took it and accepted it. And then you can move it on to someone who needed it. I'm sure that's what the Dalai Lama did. Well, maybe he didn't pull on the skirt like I put on the socks. But, you know, he would have taken it, thank you so much, and then given it maybe to the next village where he gave it to another poor lady. Now that's what we do with gifts. So don't, if you get a gift, don't say, you know, get something from Myers. Don't go back, you know, a few days later and exchange it. If it's something you don't need, somebody must need that. Go and give it to someone else. And then this is this beautiful merit. This is karma. This is joy. This is love. You're part of this beautiful act of sharing. First of all, you receive this gift. It's wonderful. They're loving, they're caring for you. And then you take it and you give it to someone else. And they love it and they care for it. And then maybe they can give it to somebody else. And they get a lot of love. Maybe they can give it back to the first person. I've seen this gift before. It doesn't really matter. It's just this beautiful, beautiful sort of transaction of caring. So this is actually why on these occasions, now we do have gifts. It's not just materialism, which sometimes people think. If you know what gifts really mean, what dana, why people share. Now look, you know, those people who have gone to visit our monasteries, whether it's Dharamsala or down at Serpentine, the amount of food we get is enormous. Much more than I could ever eat. In fact, you know, the very first time, this was from when our monks first went to England. Just, you know, people just loved those monks so much, they always made sure they were well fed. And you see, we put all our food in a bowl. And this was, 27 years ago or something. One of the Englishmen, he was very curious. He said, "All this food in your bowl." He went over and had a look in one of the monks' bowls. And he was astounded at how much was in there. He didn't realize this had to last them for 24 hours. Now, we only eat one meal a day, so it has to be much more than just a dinner. Imagine breakfast, lunch and dinner and all your snacks all together. So there's a considerable amount of nutriment there. And this Englishman looked in that bowl and said, "Bloody hell, there's enough there to feed a whole bloody army," he said. And the poor monk, he lost his appetite. But why do we do that? Just for the joy of it. And it's a wonderful thing to do that. And it's a great thing we have going for us, monks and nuns. You know, we invite people to dinner every day, to lunch, and they bring the lunch. Not only do the people we invite bring the lunch, they wash up afterwards. The monks and nuns, we just do the eating. Now, it's not just that. It's just for the joy of it. You know, we share other things with people. And they give things to us as well. And you know, the trouble is, though, that sometimes people think that what you give to others, you'll get that back in return. Because this was, I was in Thailand recently, and when I go on arms, going on arms round in Thailand is one of the most beautiful experiences. What was that last Tuesday morning? I was in Thailand and had gone on arms round. And just people, you just walk. And you don't stop, and people come running after you. They just want to give you things. And you got so much stuff, but one of the things, my bowl soon got very full and heavy because people were giving you water. A bottle of water, that's really heavy. And the reason was because a Thai general, you know how important generals are in Thailand? The Thai general had a dream. He dreamed that his father or grandfather was up in heaven. And the only food which he'd eat was what he gave to the monks. And he had lots of nice food, but he didn't have anything to drink. So the general wrote to the newspaper and said, "Look, all you people who give alms food to the monks, make sure you give them water so your relations up in heaven can have water to drink." And I noticed today, just at the end of the meal, this little boy gave a big roll of toilet paper to the monks. Because they must know that if you don't give toilet paper to the monks and nuns, when you go to heaven, you'll have nothing to wipe your bottom with. That's only just joking and stuff. That's not how it works. But sometimes people think like that. The point is when you're sort of, you're kind and generous, it's an act of love. And whatever extra we have, we share it with other people, with refugees, poor people, it all ends up somewhere. And it's that act of caring, that act of love is what we do. So it's not materialism if you know how to use these presents and these gifts and stuff. Like what many people do, just can see the board over there, instead of buying presents for people, you just do a donation, say to the Bangladesh orphanage or to somebody else, that's at the end, back over there, every year, this time of year, we do a collection for these kids who can really make use of money. So if you're thinking of a present to give to your sort of husband or wife, give a donation to the Bangladesh orphanage and we send the receipt to your husband or your wife. Say, "Husband, this is your Christmas present. The donation to the Bangladesh orphanage or the Buddhist society which I've given on your behalf." It's quite beautiful. So you're doing it out of love for the other person. So everybody wins. Whatever it is, an act of kindness, an act of love, and that act of generosity should really be respected. And it's not just materialism, it's not just trying to get something more, it's just trying to love more, trying to embrace more. But of course the best acts in Christmas is actually sending a nice present to someone you really hate. So maybe this Christmas, it may be your ex, it may be the boss at work who sacked you, it may be somebody who really cruelly abused you. Get them something you think they like and send them as a Christmas present. May all beings be happy and well. Include them in your circle and see what they do. I remember years ago we were having this fight with clay trucks coming past our monastery. For those who remember those times, there was these very dangerous clay trucks coming past our monastery. And you know, eventually we tried to protest about it and ended up going in court. And I remember just one of our monks, he had this wonderful idea, let's send a Christmas card to the adversaries, the people the Buddhist Society were fighting in court. So he sent them a Christmas card. It was a wonderful thing. They said, wow, you Buddhists really know about spirituality. You know, even though it was an adversary, someone the Buddhist Society was fighting for the peace of our monastery, the safety of the people in the road, still we sent them Christmas cards. That's a wonderful little thing to do, which actually puts our world, you know, into perspective. Kindness, generosity, love, by making little gestures like that, are just wonderful things to do. Because sometimes when you know where it's coming from, it's a kind gift, it's just so hard to resist. So we use the idea of gifts at this time, you know, for a way of getting more people in our circle, having peace and goodwill, and trying to find some ways to have circuit breakers to the hate, the ill will, the carrying on from the past, the misunderstandings, the terrible things which just make our lives just so miserable. The whole idea of spirituality is not to divide the world, but try and unite the world. Trying to mend such problems which separate people. So it's a wonderful thing that Buddhists celebrate Christmas as Christians would celebrate our Vaisak. Anything which is good and wonderful, we want to celebrate, but we make it the heart of these traditions, not the superficial rituals. Sometimes it's the rituals which divide us, you know, the way you have to do it this way, the way you have to do it that way. And sometimes, you know, even here, that you know, you have all the etiquette for this in this hall. But you know the most important etiquette when you come into a Buddhist temple? It's not taking off your shoes. It's not pointing the feet at the Buddha. It's not being properly dressed. The most important etiquette when you come in here is to be kind. It's kindness, compassion is the most important thing. Because I remember one time at a talk, a few years ago, there was a woman in the middle of my talk, laid down, fell asleep and started snoring. In the middle of one of my talks. And I was so disappointed when somebody woke her up. I was. Because they woke her up and we found out afterwards that this poor lady was having such a difficult time at home. She wasn't sleeping. She hadn't slept for days. And this was one place she felt safe, accepted, and cared for. And I told off the people who woke her up. If that happens again, let her sleep. What's the point of these talks which the monks and nuns give here? Trying to teach you to be kind, be compassionate. To open the door of your heart to people. Draw circles which can include more and more people. So if somebody is like that and they want to take a sleep, please lay down. Maybe we can go and get a pillow from one of our rooms for you. Now that's compassion, that's kindness, that's spirituality. So yeah, we have these rules, we have this etiquette, try to keep them, but remember the most important etiquette. And sometimes I remind us here, you know, this is the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. It's Buddhist, we put that one first. It's not the Society of Western Australian Buddhists. It's Buddhist first of all. Compassion first of all. Society, the country you live in, the state you live in, that comes afterwards. So the Buddhist Society of Western Australia is not in competition with the Buddhist Society of Victoria or the Buddhist Society of South Australia. That Western Australia comes at the very end. That's not so important. Even society is not important with all its rules and regulations and constitutions. Yeah, it is important, but the most important thing is the Buddhist part of it. So we try and be Buddhist. And what do we mean by being Buddhist? We're a religion. Even the religion comes before even that. Even before religion, truth, spirituality, kindness comes first. So always think that, you know, what's the most important, the highest priority? And of course it is to be kind, to be compassionate, to be inclusive. Which is why that someone like Ajahn Chah, as soon as he saw Christmas or Buddhismus, of course I can include that. If it's kind, I can be kind. If it's peaceful, yeah, I love peaceful. Even know what the word for peace is in Pali? The word for peace in Pali is Santa. You know, in Sanskrit it's Shanti. You know what people in sort of India will wish one another, Shanti, peace. And Santa is a word for peace in Pali. So of course Santa Claus, you know, peaceful Mr. Claus. You must be a Buddhist. Actually, that's where you got the word for saint from. You know, the word for saint, even sanctity, it all comes from that old Indian word, because all these languages like Latin and even English, they're Indo-Aryan languages. Now, they came from India. Now, this is why we have many of these Indian words. Well, some of the words which I learned as a Buddhist, you understand where these words came from, are the ones we have now. Even like lucky. You know what the English word lucky comes from? From Lakhi, which was a goddess of good fortune. An Indian goddess. So to be lucky is to be like, you know, part of the god of good fortune. So it's amazing when you go into these ancient cultures and you learn where some of these ideas and concepts actually we have today come from. So Santa, what she's saying, is a peaceful one. So of course, you know, Santa Claus going ho 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 and ringing a bell, he's not peaceful enough. Get rid of the bell. Get rid of the ho ho ho. And meditate like a monk or a nun. Now you're real Santa. So when it gets to peace and goodwill, yeah, we have an idea what peace is. And that religion should worship peace more than dogma. And they should have goodwill, compassion, as their first part of their creed. Not to say we are the best and better than other people, but compassion is the best. And compassion is better than hatred and ill will. Including others is better than excluding. That having a big circle is better than a small circle. And the bigger that circle can be, then the more spiritual we truly are. The more, because you can't change life. You can't stop people mistreating you, abusing you. You mistreated people. You've abused people yourselves. Now, we've all done that. So we can't stop that. What we can do is include it into the fabric of our life. Not to say it's wrong, but it's part of life. A part of life which gives us the opportunity to really test our wisdom and to strengthen our wisdom. To find these wonderful ways of making us be more compassionate, testing and stretching our compassion until it meets the obstacle and includes things which before we just didn't like and found it difficult to bear. Now I can include it. Now I'm at peace with it. Now it's part of me. I don't need to exclude it anymore. This is what I mean by making peace with things. Accepting and embracing your life, the lives of others, embracing life as it is. Do you love life? When I ask that question, people say, yeah, of course I love life. I say, do you? Or is it just you love the nice part of life? And most people say they only like the nice part of life. They're honest. There's a part of life which they don't like. If there's a part of life which you don't like, accept and embrace, that's called suffering. Draw increasing that circle, widening it, means there's less and less which you don't dislike about life. And you can do it. You have examples, and hopefully the monks and the nuns who sit in this chair will be examples of how that can be done, how that is being done. It is possible. I remember reading this story of some of these, again, Buddhist monks in Tibet who were imprisoned and tortured. And they could still love their torturers. They say, no, no, we're not going to allow the torture to stop our compassion. And that's and they meant it. I mean, there's books about that, written by some of the Tibetan monks who were tortured. Not just Tibetan monks, but even some of the Christian monks. You know, my favourite monk, St. Lawrence. St. Lawrence. He's one of my favourite monks. He was a Christian. The reason is, you soon find out why he's my favourite monk, or one of my favourite monks, because he said something which was heretical. And in those days, you really were in big trouble when you said something heretical. He ended up being burnt. Somebody found out the real story. They had this little grating, like a toaster, and they tied him to it, and it was just basically this big metal plate, tied him on top of it, and heated it up to burn him to death. And his last words before he lost consciousness, being in such pain, which you know what it's like when you've burnt a finger, imagine your whole body being burnt. His last words before he lost consciousness were, "Turn me over, this side's done." Wow, he cracked a joke. Now that's the sort of monk I like. You've got no choice. You're dying anyway. You're hurting. Why not crack a joke and make people happy? It must be terrible watching someone be burned to death. So he had that strength of character to crack a joke when he's being burnt to death. And that's my type of monk. I hope I can live up to that, but please don't test me. If I tell a joke, it'd probably be an old one. You'd probably turn up the flame. But you can embrace even pain and death and not get angry at it. And that's something which is really spiritual. And this time of Christmas, remember that. Never allow other people's stupidity, hatred, ill will to control your happiness. Part of the spiritual path, the examples you have, is so that people can actually do that. Because people who hurt you, abuse you, cheat you, or even torture you, they're doing that, why? To try and make you unhappy. Imagine refusing to get unhappy. That really pisses the torturers off. But that's not the reason you do that. You do that just because, why not? Why allow the unpleasant part of life to control your happiness? What you're doing is you're embracing the whole of life. You love the whole of life. And by loving, I'm not saying liking, you open the door of your heart to the whole of existence, the whole of life, sickness, disappointment, tragedy, joy, fun, parties, and funerals. You open the door of your heart to all of that, the sweet and sour curry that is life. And when you can do that, it is peace to the whole of the world. And something changes. This is not just the resignation of passivity and just not being active and being responsible in this world. Such an attitude of embracing, accepting is contagious. A Buddha walks the earth and people see that and say, "I want to be like that." Someone who's at peace, someone who's loving of enemies, someone who's kind and is impossible to make angry. You say, "Wow, I want to be like that." Which is why that people follow in those footsteps. You make many more peaceful, happy, free people if you're like that. And you find the world does become a better place. Instead of people fighting each other, even fighting life, committing suicide when life doesn't go according to their plans or the way it should be, instead of getting angry and upset, we have people who are at peace. People who won't sort of react with suicide bombs, with tanks, or with fighter bombers, who just make peace with the world. People who would be able to go to each other's churches and synagogues and mosques and temples can go there because my circle includes you as well. Where compassion and peace become so powerful and all-embracing, well, it tears down the walls which separate people. And when there's no walls, we've got nothing to lob our bombs over. We're together and at peace. It can happen. It has happened.
we make it happen. Peace and goodwill to all beings. We are all concerned about the future of the planet, of our societies. And we are coming together. Just look around this room. Just the different cultures, the different genders, the different ages, the different nationalities. And I hope, and I'm sure there are many Christians in this room, hopefully some Muslims. I know that some Muslims listen to my talks in Iran. They're not supposed to, but they do. Well done. Because we want to embrace everybody. In this time, peace and goodwill to all beings. It can be done. Why can't it be done? I'm rebellious enough to say, yeah, I'm going to try and do it. To be inclusive, a wide and wide circle. So in this period of peace and goodwill to all people, it's not just say, yeah, peace and goodwill to all people, and then getting arguing with your family, and just shouting at your mother-in-law when she comes round for Christmas and gives you a hard time again. No, peace and goodwill to all people. Get that circle, expand it, and include all these people in. And all the people you hated, bring them in. Have forgiveness. And that way we understand what spirituality is all about. And for yourself, all that, the terrorists in your past, the terrible things you've done, I mean, the terrorist actions which you've done, all the things you're ashamed of, all the things you enjoy about life, love the whole of life. You know why? Because you're stuck with life. And we may be trying for years to change life and get rid of the unpleasant part. Have you succeeded? I've tried, but I haven't succeeded. There's still lots of unpleasantness in my life. Can't do much about it. I realize that is life. So, instead of trying to beat them, join them. So join the unpleasantness, the disappointments, the tragedies. Join them. Embrace them. Be at peace with them. Peace and goodwill to all beings, to all parts of my life, past, present and future. Embracing everything. Everything has its place. Everything should have been there. I now know that and appreciate that. The unpleasant part was important. If I didn't have those difficulties and those tragedies, I wouldn't be able to do what I can do today. Tough at the time, difficult, hard to bear, but thank you so much. I embrace everything. And all those people who gave me a hard time, I learned so much from you. All those people who mistreated me, thank you so much. Because without that, I would not have the strength, the compassion, and the wisdom. Thank you so much, all my enemies. Ah, oh, I love you so much. Without you, I'd have got nowhere. Understanding things like that, we understand what the reason for Christmas is, and why Ajahn Chah called it Buddhamas. Where we can take this part of the year and make use of it and celebrate its heart. Not the sort of the trappings, but its heart, the spirituality, peace and goodwill, caring, giving presents, and also receiving presents as we celebrate the gesture of love which giving signifies. So when that happens, you may all have a very happy Buddhamas and a very spiritual Buddhamas and a wonderful Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever it is. Celebrate the lot. Why not? Thank you for listening. Okay, anyone got any questions about this evening's talk? I don't know what title you're going to call it. Maybe call it Happy Christmas. I don't know. Happy Buddhamas. Any comments or questions about this evening's Dhamma talk? Really? My goodness. Yes. Hi.
Ecological part of giving to
Yes, the ecological effect of giving, such as giving Christmas cards. And I think many of you know that, they've actually done this, that whenever they send a Christmas card, they write in pencil on the Christmas card, so I can rub it, erase it out, and send it to someone else afterwards. So that way the Christmas card goes round and round and round, so recycling. But you know, if you write on it with a sort of pen, you can't actually reuse it anymore. So if you are sending Christmas cards, write in pencil, you know, like very soft pencil, so you can rub it out and send it to somebody else afterwards, and it keeps going round and round and round. You've got one Christmas card, because my mate over in Cambridge, I went to see him in October, now, I think his wife, she's quite a good artist, drew a Chinese dragon, and he was actually an ambassador somewhere, a consul over in Macau many years ago, so he's actually the China expert, apparently, for the Foreign Office in England now. But anyway, his wife drew a Chinese dragon and sent it to me, but with a piece of paper inside with Merry Christmas, so I could actually reuse the dragon afterwards. My memory wasn't that good, because 12 months later I was thinking, what Christmas card could I send to my friend? And I saw, oh, this is a nice Chinese dragon. I didn't realize he sent it to me the year before, so I sent it back again. And so he said, can we keep doing this backwards and forwards every year? Hey, wonderful idea. Because that way you still, you know, have the sort of the acts of kindness and love, but you can actually recycle it. So if you get any Christmas cards, or you send any Christmas cards, or any greeting cards, birthday cards, or whatever, use pencil. It can be erased, and you can send it on, make use of it next time. It's not much good for the economy, but it's very good for saving the forests, yeah? Yeah, for those of you who know how to use computers, but for some people that don't know how to do e-cards. But you know, sometimes even e-cards, sometimes if it's just a press of a button, it's not as much effort as actually, you know, writing something on a piece of paper. So I mean, sometimes it's just like the effort, the amount of time it took to actually to do that, that's what makes a beautiful gift. So anyway, maybe okay, e-cards, whatever, go whatever. Yeah. Are you offending people by? Well, if you offend them from, if you discourage them from giving one thing, make sure they can give something else. So if you don't send a real card, send an e-card, or sort of send a message, or a telephone conversation, or something, because not giving anything is actually saying, no, don't love, don't care. So sometimes it's great to give. And of course, how can we give unless there's someone to receive? So, you know, you've given a lot. Also be a good receiver as well. So, yeah, I think maybe don't discourage too much, but maybe have simple gifts, environmentally friendly gifts or whatever. And then just encourage those. But same as saying, please give. Please share, please love. So when you receive something, always receive it, even if you can't use it. Someone can, and move it on. So it's Christmas, a time of giving and also receiving. You know, in sort of the Buddhist, traditional Buddhist countries, that when it's your birthday, you give gifts, you don't receive them. I remember telling some kids at a school once, because they want to know about Buddhist culture and how it differs from the culture in the West. I said, yeah, when it's your birthday, you give your friends some gifts. And one of the kids, being Australian, said, oh, I'm not going to give anything on my birthday, I want to get gifts. But I said, look, if you only give gifts, if you only get gifts on your birthday, you only receive gifts one day a year. But if you give gifts to your friends when it's your birthday, how many friends do you have? 6 or 7, 10 friends? It means you get gifts on 10 days each year. And the kid thought, okay, I'm going to be a Buddhist. Yeah, much more fun when you give. So that's why on birthdays, we actually give dana. We give gifts. It's a wonderful way of looking at it. Instead of getting gifts. Do you want to try that? So next time it's your birthday,
send gifts to all your friends. And when it's their birthday, they send gifts to you. So you get celebrations on many days of the year, rather than just one.